Hello and welcome to Rule of Carnage. This is a video series, or maybe it's a podcast, depending on the technology you're using to access this media. But regardless, it's a series of conversations about designing better miniature games. My name's Mike. I have designed some miniature games, including Gaslands, A Billion Suns, and the recently kickstarted Hobgoblin. This is Glenn. He has also written many miniature games, some of which will soon be reaching the light of day, and I'm very excited to talk more about that on future episodes. In the world of designing my own miniature games, there is a topic which interests me greatly because it is a place where games that I write quite often break horribly. And given that this is a podcast about designing better miniature games, I really want to zoom in on this one. When I'm writing a game, I have sort of roughly two phases of the game's design, and then I have to bounce between these two. So first is, how can I make a fun toy, like an engine, a series of buttons and switches and knobs and twiddly bits that are just fun to interact with, so that as you put models on the table and then you zoom them around and they attack each other, is that fun? And once that's fun, once the toy is fun, then you have to figure out what the victory conditions are. And you come up with a scenario, and then you probably come up with five more so that you can roll a D6 or something and pick a scenario. And inevitably, one or two of those scenarios is completely garbage and goes so far as to undermine everything that you've just done with building the wonderful toy in the first part. And so then you have to go back and you have to figure out what you've done to break your game. And so I guess what I wanted to talk about is some examples, maybe from, you know, the sort of backwards and forwards that we've worked on together, of places where a bad scenario can completely kill a good game. So I'll tell you the most pressing example is there's a table of scenarios in Hobgoblin. I can't remember how many there are right now because it's a 2d6 table and it's not evenly spread out. It's probably seven, maybe. But anyway, one of those has always been, in various ways of its being written, a sort of attack defense one, where somebody has to zoom into the end zone and end the game in the opposing player's deployment zone. This is quite a classic scenario. Sometimes you have to leave the board edge. Sometimes you have to sort of end the game in there. Sometimes it's like a rush in, and whilst you're squatting there, you earn points. You know the sort of scenario. But Glenn, do you want to just point out the problems that you found with that, and then we can generalize from there?
Well, I mean, so to try and voice it specifically, it's that in that specific scenario, it's that if I get points for being in your deployment zone, I have no reason to engage you in combat whatsoever. Ideally, what I want to do is hide behind a bush until the last half of the last turn and fly or teleport or use an ambush ability or something, pop up into your deployment zone and go, you've got one round of combat to wipe out my entire army. You're not going to achieve it. We haven't played a game, essentially, and I have won. I mean, saying it in general terms, and I think this is one of the, for me, the two big places that scenarios fall down, and this is one we'll probably spend a while talking about. It's disengage to win is the phrase that I sort of use for it. So we were playing a scenario, and one of the there's that coin of disengage to win, which is somebody has a victory condition which they can achieve by just running over somewhere and standing there at the last second. We experienced something the other weekend. We were playing a game where one side, it was an asymmetrical narrative game. One side had the sort of the victory points set and static so that if nothing changed, they would win. And the other side had to come in and change the thing. And so one side was fully just rewarded for just spending the whole game walking off the table. The smart thing to do was just to walk straight off the table, to just walk off and go, okay, there we go. And funnily enough, because I was playing with Mike on my team, the point where it was just move 2 inches off the table and we win by a significant margin didn't happen, because, and this is a significant point here, is that if you create a disengage to win element in the scenario, you're forcing people to pick between like playing to win or trying to make their own fun.
Right. Like in this case, like the engine of fun, the thing with the dials and the switches and the levers, I wanted to keep pulling those levers for as long as possible, to the point where in the final turn, I had the option of either doing a boring single walk and then removing my model, or and getting 3 victory points, or having one final go at throwing a potion and turning a character into a fishman. And I hadn't managed to do the potion fishman thing all game. So I was like, do you know what? I will just disengage from the victory conditions and I will engage instead with the fun knobs. And that's just because I chose to lose, I had slightly more fun with the engine. And so, you know, it had those things been better meshed where, you know, the thing where the thing with the knobs where you're throwing fishmen and, you know, shooting giant nuclear rockets and whatnot was also the way that you win, should be the way that the scenario is written. But it's easy to say out loud, and it's incredibly pernicious when you actually go about writing these scenarios.
Yeah, and I think I will say just quickly, like, I'm fine with scenarios that say just engage with the game engine because the game engine is fun, but the game engine had better be fun. If that's what you're
talking. But I think for the purpose of this conversation, we'd better assume that as,
I mean, it's a fine example in relation to this game we played, because you did sit back and you did throw that potion to try and turn somebody into a fishman, and what happened?
Nothing for the fourth time that game.
Nothing for the fourth turn in a row. And that's the real problem there, is the fundamental engine just went. And it's like, no, you really should have just engaged with the victory conditions, because you ain't getting no fun out of engaging with the toy. The only way you could possibly get a version of enjoyment is to at least go, well, at least I won. I mean, there we go.
So one of the ways that I often start the scenario design, but end up potentially bumping into this problem, like the lightest way of this is, like, if the fun engine is, you know, in the case of Hobgoblin, like units smashing into each other, then the first question I need to ask is, let me assume that the players are inert and they are just going to stand there. How do I force them to engage with the thing that I think is fun? And so Gasland says, you don't win unless you drive through all of these gates in order. Hobgoblin basically has scenarios where there's stuff in the middle, or you have to kill something in order to win or something, like you've got to chase someone down. And it's slightly harder in like straight up battle games to come up with interesting ways to say, get the heck out of your deployment zone, step up and actually start rolling dice. It's easier, I think, in small scale skirmish games, weirdly. But I guess like that's the first point for me, is like, whatever the core activity of this game is, the first scenario that I write has to say, go and engage with that core activity and you will only win by engaging in that.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that's quite tricky with something like a mass battle game, is that we all know that the standard scenario, and scenario I think is a slightly generous term for it, is line up, run into the middle, batter each other, you get points for everything you kill, job done.
Yeah.
And like, that's what we'll see in 90% of sort of mass battle games. And as we've sort of commented before on the channel, if a mass battle game has 6 scenarios and one of them is that, 90% of the games that get played of that game will be that scenario. But yeah, if your game is doing anything else, I think it's a point where you need to understand the actual engine of your game. I always think that victory conditions should be signposts to fun for your players.
That's a nice way of saying it.
You know, a lot of games say, here's my game, have fun with it, and assume that like everybody has some sort of telepathic knowledge of what is fun about this game. When you give someone a game, you've basically sort of tipped out a pile of parts and cogs onto the tabletop. and then running away going, enjoy that. If you put it together properly, it's this amazing machine. That's not actually helping people to have fun. You give people like victory conditions and a sort of a win condition, because you say, ooh, look, here's a little signpost pointing you to an activity that I want you to attempt to achieve. Try that out and see what happens. And hopefully they try out and they go, oh, that was a lot of fun. And then you end up doing the fun and the victory conditions become maybe less important. And if what those victory conditions are saying is, hey, why not just head down and run off the table and ignore the other person and don't engage with anything? It's like, okay, well, I'll do that. This seems like it's not going to engender much enjoyment. And yeah, no, it turns out it didn't. What should I have done? Oh, I should have like engaged. That's not what you were telling me to do. And you get that disjunct. It's like
one place where the running off, because one game in which the running off scenario is actually really, really enjoyable and it's quite well executed is in Adeptus Titanicus, where broadly speaking, you've got big, slow robots and you've got little fast robots, and there's like a primary and secondary objective situation where you basically end up tending to have two missions, and it's quite often that you end up like the last game I played, I have to get somebody off the edge of the table carrying some, you know, secret package, and you're going to try and do the same thing, and so now I need to send some guys forward and hold some guys back to sort of catch your runners. And instantly it just created this nice tension where it's like, well, I've got fast guys and slow guys, so clearly the slow guys are going to protect the end zone and stumble forward a bit and the run, and then you've got this exciting, you know, you've got this exciting tension where the game is sort of set into motion and you both have you're both sort of forced, strongly encouraged to rush around and try and do things, but you're also like, the game itself provides the sort of fun engine where some things are slow and lumbering and some things are really fast, so you better use the right tool for the job. And you know, the fact that the missions exist like that means you have to have several tools in your toolbox. You can't just have the lumbering people or you'll always lose the end zone running mission. But like, so you can implement these things well.
Yeah. I think any sort of given set of conditions can be made to work. You've just got to figure out what player behaviours they're going to engender and make sure that those player behaviours engage with the funnest bit of your fun engine and, very importantly, engage with the other human being. Because the funnest bit in your fun engine is not going to be as much fun as the other guy stood across the tabletop, or at least, God, I hope not. You know, you want to get the people who like each other, you know, or enjoy experiencing other human beings or whatever, to engage with each other at some point. And that's not a given. It's not, because there are sometimes games that basically dump a bunch of guys on a table, assume that any person playing the game is going to be a belligerent psychopath, and just go, well, obviously you're going to try and shoot him with guns, so I don't have to worry about you engaging with him. I'll write some other conditions that have nothing to do with him whatsoever. And inevitably, you know, some player's going to look at that and go, oh, there's no reason whatsoever for me to engage with you. Apparently, looking at the rules, I don't actually need to engage with you. Let's see what happens if I just don't. Oh, right. That was both boring and incredibly successful. Great. Maybe I'll try and make my own fun. And I think one of the things is, like, I often say that, you know, players should want to win. They should care about winning. I want them to care about winning because I want to make winning the fun thing. And I want you to follow winning because that's how I'm going to, like, lead you to fun. Now, I don't think that caring about winning is not the same as, like, only caring about winning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the same as caring about winning at all costs. But it's like, if somebody doesn't care about winning and you don't know what they care about when they pick the game up, you don't know what they're going to do. And it's not enough to just say, oh, just have some fun. It's like, you know, I need some guidance to it. It's like, I sort of think of, like, saying that I want people to care about winning is sort of like saying that I care if I have a shopping bag when I go shopping. I don't care about the shopping bag. I couldn't give a monkey's what sort of shopping bag it is that I'm using, but I really care whether or not I have a shopping bag when I've got an armful of, you know, potatoes and stuff. And it's like, I don't care about the win conditions. Win conditions don't matter, but I care that there are win conditions because that's how I'm going to guide the two people to interact with each other. It's how the other person is going to know the sorts of things you're going to do, so they can react to them and they can frame what you're trying to do and they can read you, and there can be an actual meeting at the tabletop.
And I think what one of that's really well said. And I think one of the things that's so pernicious about this, or dangerous about this area of rules writing, is that you can spend a lot of time playtesting your core engine, and you will probably be using that same first scenario, whether it's the fight everyone or whatever. And then you think, oh, I'm going to add a few more extra scenarios in. And then if you don't playtest them as much, you can end up with quite weird situations. One thing that you're always pointing out is like where a scenario that's trying to be slightly, you know, different, so that the game, you know, has some different ways of feeling on the table, when a scenario incentivizes or like overly rewards a really weird esoteric build. So something with teleporting or something with, you know, lots of bodies or something. And it's fine, like a range of scenarios that incentivizes different kind of force types is good. That's a good thing. It means, particularly if you've got a random scenario selection and therefore, you know, you need a nice balanced army list. But it is like one thing that quite often catches me off guard, where I'm like thinking about general normal Gaslands teams or Hobgoblin armies, and like two of those meeting together with this victory condition, that would make sense. And then when you look at it in the cold light of day, it's like, well, actually, if you just take you know, flying cavalry, then the whole thing is completely ridiculous. And, you know, there's only one way to win this scenario, and it's impossible to beat.
Yeah, and I think there's I think one of the things we said a few times, and there's something I very much believe, is that fun and powerful is fine, fun and weak is fine, boring and weak is fine, boring and powerful, that should immediately set off massive alarm bells. Don't allow boring and powerful in your game. The rest of them all have perfectly good places. Put all of the rest of them in somewhere or another. Boring and powerful, you need to kill that. You need to shoot through the head immediately. And I think one of the things particularly, like, for example, one of the things about Hobgoblin, this is an interesting, I think, thing, is that because Hobgoblin has this, like, fully miniatures agnostic thing, where any miniature can be like anything and any set of rules can be anything depending on your imagination, one of the issues is that a fully flying army in Hobgoblin is not some sort of min-maxing tournament scumbag army. It's someone who's going, I want Pegasuses, I want everything to be Pegasuses and dragons, oh, this is a lovely fluffy army. And then they oh, I'm having fun with my lovely army. Oh, let me look at this scenario. Oh, look, I am invincible. Yeah. It's like, oh, right, okay. I mean, because you've built it in such a way, it's like, yes, I want an all sneaky ambushing army. I love the idea of, I want my beastmen. I love the beastmen all ambushing army. I'm going to run that thing in a Hobgoblin because it lets me do it again. And then, you know, there's a scenario that goes, oh, look, I also win because I played this actually what I was intending to be a fluffy, fun, silly army, an army that was not overly powerful when I like played it last time. And then one of these scenarios just goes, brackets, if you've got lots of sneaky, congratulations, that was fun. You know, shake hands and try again.
And with that, we'll take a quick break.
Another kind of scenario that always trips me up is I quite often want to write scenarios where you have to eliminate a certain kind of unit. And then if somebody doesn't have that kind of unit, then I have to figure out how to do it. But like the ultimate point is, like, you want enough variety so that people come back to the game multiple times. Like, it's possible that the fun engine is so fun and the default scenario is so perfect that you don't need anything else. I believe that I have written some games that are like that, where like there's one iconic way to play it and that you don't need a second scenario. But I think, you know, with Hobgoblin, you absolutely do. And it's just so risky, particularly when you've played it a certain way so much.
Well, I think the thing of it is that there are simple ways of like tweaking one idea. You figure out what the actual idea of your game is, and then you tweak it various ways. So, for example, you know, Hobgoblin is a mass battle game. Two lines move together and they go bonk, and then you've got like a a long, thin, even level line of interest around the table. And so you go, okay, bump. That point there is where things score. And now, instead of it being a nice flat line where all of it matters, you've got these curves that pile in and you desperately try to get to that spot. And then you go, okay, now there's like spot there, spot there, spot there. And you get to place these spots at the start of the game. And so it's a little tactical thing. And now you have lots of little sort of discrete skirmishes and which one are you going to pile into and which one you aren't, you know, and you move those spots around, you assign those spots to particular units. It's not sort of indescribably, you know, beyond the wit of man to figure these things out. It's just sometimes you get this little devil on your shoulder that goes, all right, what about doing this other thing that doesn't seem to inherently engage with your engine? Maybe that's a really interesting way of someone engaging with your engine. Maybe that's a good thing. And then you sort of write this thing up and someone goes, but I'm just not engaging with your fun engine at all. Why did you do that? It's like, because I wanted to like step out of my box. It's like, you built.
And I think, you know, you mentioned us playing a narrative scenario recently. I think that's another place where there's particular sort of pitfalls there, which is if you are, rather than just you doing a kind of generic set of victory conditions that will work for many, many types of forces, if you're going to try and create a scenario that tells a story, then it's quite easy to fall into the trap of like, well, the world that I'm trying to create, the narrative I'm trying to create for this is this, and therefore I will just write the scenario as if that's going to happen. But then futz around with either the composition or the victory conditions to the point where it's so far adrift from the core engine that it just sort of ceases to mesh anymore. This happened a ton in the end time scenarios.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the things generally about narrative scenarios, and this is the one other sort of big thing I'll say quite quickly, is that individuality and narrative and things like that are deviations from a norm. You want a norm. A norm is a good thing.
Yeah.
And then spikes out of it are interesting. If everything is spikes, if everything has gone out of the norm, you just have a sort of chaotic mass, and it loses any interest. If everything is a deviation from the norm, then you've just created a new norm, just one that's really diffuse and difficult to understand and confusing. You know, you want to go, okay, here's the box, here's what you're used to. Ideally, train your players in that by using repeated language and reminding them of these shapes that you've built for them. And then going, okay, here's the box. And in this one, whoop, there's a spike out there of the box. And in this one, whoop, there's one over there. Don't just go, okay, I've got a box in my head. You haven't seen the process of me building that box or ever seen the box. And the first time you see the box, it's in bits everywhere because I've just blown all the parts off of it. And then you've got five different piles of bits. And it's just like, there's no narrative there anymore. There's no individualism anymore because there's too many deviations from that norm. You know, help people out, give them a shape, and then mess with the shape, but don't destroy it, don't ruin it, don't turn it into some like a blancmange.
I mean, so this feels like a nice segue into the sort of second part of this conversation about complexity, because like one of the things I love about Malifaux is that there is no default game. There's no scenario zero where we just play a game of Malifaux the normal way. Like what we do is we smash out, you know, at least three fairly esoteric objectives, and then we scratch our heads trying to figure out how to like solve this quadratic equation using our action points. And so I think most games sort of are written and are presented to us with a default game in mind. And then I think the question is, how much are you going to signpost that, and how much are you going to sort of signpost, well, there is no default way to play. But I think then complexity becomes the other point of discussion, which is in your quest to create a very unique feeling tabletop experience, it is quite, I myself have fallen into the trap of creating quite a lot of rules that you've got your fun engine, and I'm now very used to playing with that fun engine because I'm the games designer. I've played this game in playtesting, you know, 30, 50 times now. And then I start adding more and more additional rules into the scenario so that every time I come to the game, and this is one of the problems with A Billion Suns, is that I have to ingest these, you know, maybe they're quite short, but they're very dense pieces of information about how each of these scenarios is going to play, each of these missions is going to play. And then I have to sort of bake that into my tactical thinking. There was a point in Age of Sigmar's life cycle where these things would spring up every turn. And so at the start of every turn, you'd get a new mission and you'd have to sort of reassess the battlefield, re-ingest the rules. Was it 6 inches? Was it completely within 6 inches? Which objective was it? Is it, do each of them score evenly? Or is it, and it's like, oh my God, like, I mean, I know there's different kinds of players and some want crunchier and some want not, but like,
I mean, I think there's an important point about sort of understanding, again, what your game is and what you wanted to do and where its fun engine is. Because you talk about Malifaux, and Malifaux, you know, has this very complex and explosively complex thing. But then the fun about Malifaux is this, at its best, this absolutely sort of wringing you out kind of mental battle that you're going into. And I think A Billion Suns is a good example of another thing where it's like the fun of A Billion Suns is the epic sort of nine-dimensional chess that you're playing. And that's fine. And not every game needs to be fun in that way. And you need to figure out most... It's like, you know, we talk about Puke Apocalypse, the game that I'm working out on that should be coming out fairly soon. It's like one of the things that's centrally fun about it is it's about shoving people around, moving them on the tabletop as much as about killing them. And so there's a lot of scenarios in that are about pushing, you know, being stood on a particular spot and therefore about how you push people off those spots, because that's the thing that's fun and I quite want you to engage with. I want you to like drop these physical things onto the tabletop and I want to get you to do that as many times as I possibly can. And it's not about complexity. It doesn't care about complexity. So it doesn't choose to engage with that. And it's about understanding your game and understanding your game engine and understanding what you want someone to do at the tabletop. What do you want to show your players? What's the thing you're most proud of? The moment that you really want them to engage with, make that the victory conditions of like your central main scenario, because there you're just going, there you go. That's where the fun is. And then pull that a little bit, a few times, and reshape it so that they engage with it in a different, fun and interesting way, so that you put like different kind of glasses on them when they're doing it, you know, and that's probably a sufficient thing to do with most of your scenarios most of the time.
And I guess one other thing is like how much of the like abstraction versus sort of storytelling. Like, I think one of the things that I find non-obvious as I'm writing objectives and missions and scenarios and stuff is like, let me be more specific. So I'm currently working on Pacific Command, my World War II naval game about, you know, naval actions. And like, the way that those missions are going to end up feeling, because of the way that the game has got kind of a strategic sort of spaceship battle vibe to it, rather than a, you know, roll some ships into the middle and slug it out vibe, is like, I want to tell these stories about like, you've got to get the invasion force over here, or you've got to stop the, you know, tankers from getting to refuel the thing, or you've got to surprise the harbor and, you know, do an attack there. Whereas quite often, you know, the way that the Hobgoblin objectives work is, you know, somewhat similar to the way that Warhammer 40,000 and War Machine work, which is like, there is an abstract set of objective tokens. We have to imagine what that means, because, you know, what the space bugs and what the space elves want is probably so different that we have to just call them objective tokens. And whatever it is that's in the middle of this pile of ruined buildings is valuable to one side or the other. And so I think that for me is kind of, it's a bit fraught, because as I'm working through the narrative of the game, like, I want to be telling more stories so that the game's more evocative, but I also want to make it quite sort of permissive to the things that are going on. This is why like A Billion Suns can get away with it, because everyone's humans, they're all corporations, there isn't like a great variety of things. So if I say save the scientists, that mostly makes sense to everyone.
I think the thing is, it's like, MacGuffins worked perfectly well for Alfred Hitchcock, and he knew how to tell a story. You know, the thing in a scenario can just be a MacGuffin, because the story of your scenario is not what the guy at the end of the thing holding aloft whatever it is found, and then we go, oh, what was it he found? How much does he enjoy it? Does he like putting on his head or running it down his legs or whatever it is? It's like, no, the story is the two people meeting to fight over the MacGuffin. That's the actual story I'm telling. Don't care too much about why they're trying to claim that crate. Care about how what they do to claim it, and what they go through to claim
it. But the thing is though that I do like specificity in my MacGuffin. So like Frostgrave has treasure tokens. I like that. That's the treasure tokens. What are we doing here? We're collecting treasure and trying to get the other the treasure before the other guys do. I like that. The sort of like grab the objective mission in Adeptus Titanicus, they give you a little like broken Titan head, and they say the crew of the Titan is in that little head, you need to go and save them. And it's just a collect the message thing, but like there's a little Titan head and I know exactly what it is. So I do like and probably don't think enough about that sort of thing. Like with Hobgoblin, like the sort of there are three objectives on the centerline battle is called Altars of Grief, and each of those altars is counts as grim terrain, and that's it. Like it's just an objective control thing, but they're piles of bodies and whatever. Like it's just like I wanted a little bit of specificity on that so that it's not as abstract. And I'm not sure I'm not making a particular rule here from a games design perspective. I'm just sort of saying it feels to me important to at least consider making them less abstract, and maybe you end up walking back from that and saying, actually, I just preferred the sort of the objective to marker thing. A Billion Suns is much more specific. It's like you are dropping water down on a planet, you are saving a scientist, you are attacking a space pirate. Like it's very sort of it's still using tropes, and you can fill in the blanks and put whatever kind of, you know, whatever sci-fi flavor is in your head when you think about, you know, saving a scientist or whatever from a space station. But I think that's, you know, I don't know that getting that specificity and abstraction wrong actually breaks your game now I think about it. But like returning to the title of the episode, like I think where we've talked about here are, you know, thinking about places where through maybe thinking shallowly about your scenario design, or not testing your scenario design, or not testing your scenario design with a sort of game breaker's eye, particularly around the force composition or the tactics. Like you can release a game in the wild which you think is excellent and is excellent, except if you choose the poison scenario, the game is just completely garbage, and the person who accidentally plays that scenario first thinks your game is dumb because it is in that one case.
And I think this would be my last sort of important point, and you know, in relation to this, is that if there's one scenario played with one particular force and in one particular way that makes your game absolutely suck, don't assume that the person who plays that way is going to be doing it because there's some sort of hardened scumbag who only ever wants to win games, and you don't even want them in your system, and who would do such a thing. It's because every possible behavior somebody will just do accidentally, every possible army list someone will just take accidentally, and every particular scenario somebody will end up playing accidentally. And if that makes your game suck, they will think your game sucks, and sometimes they won't shut up about it. They will let everybody know how much your game sucks and how much a problem it is, and how they're a sweet normal player and they picked up this thing because you thought this was a fluffy army list and you happen to play the scenario, and then the game just fell immediately to pieces. And I do see people, you know, say, okay, well, what if someone did this, this, that, and that? And other people say, well, only a scumbag would do that. I wouldn't bother playing with somebody who did it. You know, they shouldn't be allowed near a tabletop. And it's like, not everyone's doing it intentionally. Somebody was just like, oh, I'll pull this lever, and then I'll pull that lever, and I'll, oh, dearie me, everything's fallen to bits. You know, make sure that your scenarios get people to engage with the fun parts of your game. That shouldn't be mysterious. It shouldn't be like, you know, oh, what a vicious tournament you get your game you are by saying, why not attach fun and winning together. That doesn't make you, that seems obvious, that seems route one, you know, make sure that it causes the two people at the tabletop to engage with each other, you know. If you're not writing a scenario that doesn't force people to do those things, I kind of don't know why you bothered writing a scenario and why you don't just go, oh, I don't know, have fun at the tabletop. This is fun. Yeah. It's all, you know, if you're writing the thing, get it to mash the funnest bits together as repeatedly and efficiently as you possibly can. Okay, I think we'll sign off on this conversation. If there is a scenario that you particularly love, that's well out of the ordinary and really shows off the elements of a particular game that you really enjoy, every time you play that scenario, it's like the finest version of that game. Tell us the scenario and tell us the game. And if you found a scenario that just makes, with a game you love, a game you really enjoy, a game that you think is brilliant, and you play
even more spicy, like if you yourself have been designing a game and accidentally built one of these scenarios,
yes, tell us about those scenarios that, you know, the when bad scenarios ruin good games. Tell us if you've had that experience. Whilst you're down there telling us about these things in the comments section, punch on the like and subscribe buttons. It'll only take a second.
Our algorithm overlords must be sated.
And then swing by the Rule of Carnage Discord and tell us about, you know, the pitfalls of bad scenarios, a weird, awful thing you wrote that you thought was a good idea, and warn people off of doing it in their own games. People will thank you and probably tell you their own horror stories. But for now, I think it's going to be a thank you and goodbye from this episode of Rule of Carnage. So thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye-bye.